And a good Sunday evening, everyone. Welcome back to St. Joe. Mitch Holtis with you, along with the snapper, Kendall Gammon, 15-year veteran, Pro Bowl long snapper. Yesterday, we talked about the kind of exhilarating Saturday practice in front of 6,500 fans here and just spectacular weather. And if it was an energy drink, today felt like a sugar drop, just a little bit. You and I kind of talked about the dog days of training camp. How much of a sense did you get that this was a grind-through practice?
Well, you know, I've been there over my 15 years, and 5 or 6 days until a game doesn't seem like a lot unless you've been in the grind for 6 days already and you've been pads every day. So, yeah, you've got to kind of create your own energy. You know, luckily, Chiefs Kingdom comes out in droves still, even with it not being family day, and you probably had 2,000-3,000 out there, which helps immensely from the player side of things because you do draw some energy from that.
You know, I've talked a lot since the end of last season about the red zone. If there was one encouraging sign today in practice, it was a lot of red zone work, and I saw just a variety of uses by the offense, different things they're going to do. We always said that in the red zone, you play the 53-yard width of the field because the field's not as big horizontally, I guess, or not as vertically, I should say. But what about the red zone work and what you're seeing and Andy Reid's approach to it?
Well, you know, you've heard some of the players talk about the fact that this is a very diverse playbook. There's a lot of plays, a lot of different formations. You know, one play may have 4 or 5 different formations in terms of how you line it up. And that's good because what you're trying to do is confuse the defense. And I think they did a pretty good job today. You saw some inverted wishbone sets, things of that nature. You've got running backs, you know, crossing away from the grain, getting the ball, just different things to help keep the defense on their heels a little bit, and that's what we saw. And really, what you said is exactly right, and you know this as well as anybody. When it gets compacted in the red zone, you've got to start using the field hash to hash because that makes a huge difference, and that's something that with a Dexter McCluster, with a Jamal Charles, people like that, that's good because you get them in those confined spaces. They can get out of it, and they can do some good things, Mitch.
We also had a chance to hear from Bob Sutton after the practice, the Chiefs defensive coordinator, and he kind of alluded to the fact that this was kind of a get-through practice with that first preseason game looming Friday night.
How's it going today defensively?
It was a good day. This was a, you know, I think a challenging day for everybody because of the point we're at in camp. But I thought, you know, they rallied, played pretty hard, and we made some mistakes, you know, which you try to eliminate. And that's crucial this time. You know, you have a lot of install in, but and it's not game plan specific, but it's important that they have the ability to zero in and keep working. And, you know, the one of the objectives is where you can get to a point and you understand it well enough to self-correct. You know, you're on the field and okay, you say, hey, I did that wrong or we did this wrong, and you can get it corrected because one of the things on defense is you don't get to come off the field and talk about that until the end of the drive, you know. So you got to understand what just happened to you.
Talking about self-correcting, I actually walked Bob up the hill today after practice, and he was saying that that's going to be an ongoing process, this week in specific, including the preseason games. What about this whole self-correcting motive by the defense?
Well, it's called being a true pro, and that's what you want. And I think it starts with the defensive coordinator in Bob Sutton. And when I've had a chance to talk to him, this is a very approachable guy. You can tell when he's on the field, Mitch. He's a teacher. That's what you hear man for man talking about with him is he teaches. He sees the little things. And I think that coupled with the fact that it's a different type of defense in terms of how it's attacking and some of the things they're doing, and I think the defensive guys, quite honestly, I think they like that.
And don't be tricked by the whole professorial look of him. He does come across as a very cerebral professorial guy. I mean, he coached at West Point for 10 years, for Pete's sake. But he's got the finger on the button. He wants to push these guys and attack with this defense.
There's no question about it, and you've got to ramp it up in practice and get used to that pace, and that's what he's getting. And if he's not getting it, he's going to figure out a way to get it. But to his point, these are the dog days, and I think the coaches sometimes can help create a little get up and go in the players also without really being demeaning or anything. And I think they just have a good mix right now. I think there's a lot of respect going on back and forth between the players and the coaches. And let's be honest, these guys, they're grown men playing, and that's how they want to be treated. You just want to be told the truth. And if you're not getting it done, tell me as a player what I need to do to get it done, and that's what you're getting.
I also sense there's respect to that offense to defense. We maybe alluded to this, and we both talked with Andy Reid yesterday a little bit about that. When you get in the camp situation, when you grind on each other every day, I've seen teams actually get divided because of the whole offense versus defensive thing every day. This group How much have they avoided that to this point?
I think they've done a great job, because when it comes down to it, the Chiefs do not play the Chiefs this year. And I can go back to my days in New Orleans, and it was when we were having a rough time, and I watched it, the several years where the offense and the defense got divided. And you saw it amongst the coaches first, and then it just transferred down to the players to a degree. Now, once we got back in the locker room, you're okay. But out on the field, it's just not productive, because now you get some cheap shots and things of that nature. I'm not seeing that, Mitch. I'm seeing tackling, taking them to the ground, but they're good fundamental tackles. I think the offense, I mean, really, you think about it, very few fights have we seen out here. And normally this time you've seen several, because it's just natural to get a little bit miffed at each other when you're going with it. That's why it's so important to get to this New Orleans game, because you want to hit somebody other than your own teammates.
There was one yesterday, Fasano and Edgar Jones mixed it up for a while, but they knew Andy Reid was there. It's like, we're not going to carry this on.
Right.
Or not a good thing with the head coach. Dante Robinson, we've mentioned him several times. This guy's a 10-year veteran. He was the 10th pick in the 2004 draft. Good years when he came out, drafted by Houston. Good years with the Atlanta Falcons. But everybody talk about the attacking style. What about the back-end guys? What about him? What have you seen from him right now being the starting nickelback?
You know what, Dante, I like him because he's got so much experience. When you hear him talk, folks, and if you haven't, make a point to get somewhere on the internet and find some video of him and listen to him, because this is a guy who's a true pro. To me, he's great in the locker room, but he's bringing the right mix of leadership and skill to the team. I think it's great that you can have him in that nickel situation. And sometimes, you know, you can push him out to the corner, and now maybe you bring B-Dot, number 24, into the slot side of things. And we've seen actually B-Dot and Sean switch sides also, so they're going to have a lot of that also. But I love his athleticism and the fact that he's been there so much and he gets it. And you just can't say enough for somebody like that being on the team, not to mention the fact that he's performed at a high, high level.
Yeah, and a very highly regarded player coming out of South Carolina 10 years ago. D'Angelo Hall was the first corner taken in that draft. Robinson was the second. But now a decade into his career, he's got a new team. He's got new teammates. And he likes what he sees.
Well, it's a great group of young guys that are hungry for knowledge, and that want to be the best they can be. You know, and they listen well. You know, they ask a lot of questions, and you know, I think that's the making of a good young secondary. You know, and I'm just here to fill in and help in any way I can. You know, help these guys max out their potential and get what they can out of their careers. The aggression in the defense is going to allow the ball to come out of the quarterback's hands a lot faster. You know, we're sending guys from, you know, you don't know who's going to blitz on any given play, you know, and we're a very aggressive defense. You know, you see guys making a lot of plays out here, and I think when you come out here and make plays, it gives you confidence going into Sundays and going into games, you know. So, you know, if you didn't have as many last year, you make it an emphasis this year to get as many as you can. And you're always trying to be better than you were a year ago. And I think this defense, I think this team will definitely be a lot better than a year ago.
Man, you got to like it, not only as a player, but the way these guys are weaving together.
No question about it.
Yep. I see it. And the corners and safeties all kind of working together. This is going to be kind of fun to watch this.
It is. And, you know, we talked about the other day, I had a chance to talk with Al Harris, and he talked about, you know, the communication between the guys and just getting used to playing with each other. It's people like that and the professionalism that he brings, which will help gel that unit as quick as possible.
Well, tonight we're going to focus on the offensive line, and after the break we'll really get into those guys. But we have some questions from you, quite honestly, and some of them have to deal with that group. And one comes in about, and it's a great question, about the offensive lineman and the ability to play multiple positions. What about that role, particularly with the backup guys, and what that means to try to make the team?
Well, it's huge. The more versatility, the better you have. We always talk about it with position players in terms of if you can play special teams. In this case, as an offensive lineman, if you're not a starter, if you can swing back and forth at one position at tackle, or even better, if you can play tackle and guard, that's huge. And that's what I think you've got in a Jeff Schwartz. I think he's very important and will be in that role. Then, of course, you've got Donald Stevenson, who's sidelined right now because of the finger, but will be back, and they don't expect anything with that. He got some good experience last year. So that seven you've got deep is pretty good. And the two guys you've got backing up, I would call your swing guys that can do a pretty good job.
Now, a question came in, and this is a good one, too, and one that can be discussed a lot. What's better, having a good quarterback or a good offensive lineman? And I ask you this, being in this game over 20 years as a player and now as a broadcaster, how many great quarterbacks have there been with bad offensive lines? And how many bad offensive lines have there been with good quarterbacks? Did I get this right? How many bad quarterbacks with good offensive lines?
Well, I see where you're going with this. When it comes down to it, there's probably been several great quarterbacks that we didn't know because they had a bad offensive line. I would say this. Offensive line is the most important because you can be a great QB, but if you're getting put on your back all the time, nobody's ever going to know it. You're not going to be successful. You can be a marginal, I'll say an average QB, but if you've got time to sit back there and throw and do things, then that's only going to help you. Now, if you got an Alex Smith, who I think is an exceptional QB, with an offensive line that which I think is up and coming, when your oldest player is only 6 years in Brandon Albert, that's the best of both worlds in my mind. Now, they've got to get on the field, and they've got to prove it, and they've got to gel as a unit because, of course, you've got Jeff Allen starting at the left guard. I know he did some last year, but he's new to a degree. Rodney Hudson, third year, but he's coming off of the injury, so he's very, very young in that sense. So they've got to come together as a unit. But I like what I'm seeing, and certainly we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Also, the difficulties of being a left tackle and a right tackle, and we'll get into Eric Fisher after the break, thought to be a future left tackle. He's playing right tackle right now. I do like what I've seen from Brandon Albert. He came into this camp. We talk about rededicated, rejuvenated a lot with this coaching staff, with the players. B.A.'s in one of the best physical shape he's been in during his time in his career, and I love the way you're talking about the young guys. He's been working with them a lot in a one-on-one fashion. But the whole left tackle, right tackle thing, how difficult is it to play one side and then go to the other?
Well, it is difficult, Mitch, and it might seem as not the way because people are like, oh, you just moved to the other side. You're still playing tackle. Well, all of a sudden now your inside post hand is an opposite hand. When you're setting in your pass sets, you know, when you go straight back, you want that inside foot facing forward because when you move it to the side is when you commit and where they have a chance to come inside. So you try to keep it forward as long as you can, and you're not used to doing those different things. It's little things like that that you've really got to hone and get used to. And Eric Fisher's, he's had a tough time with some of that. Let's be honest with that. But the fact is, you know what, this is going to take a little time. I'm not worried at all about it. I think he'll come along just fine. But it's definitely been a transition for him.
I've always tried to give the analogy, it's like having a plate full of peas and taking it five times with a fork with the right hand and then with the left hand. I don't think that's all that far from the truth because the footwork and everything else, you got to go almost a 180.
It is much more difficult than you might think. There's no doubt about it.
We come back. We're going to get more into this offensive line. It is a crowded group. How many do you keep? And we're going to jump back into the question that you had about doing different jobs because there's a couple of candidates on this team. You mentioned Jeff Schwartz, and there's a new guy in town that could fit that role. We'll have that when we come back on Chiefs Live.
This is a dorm room, but it's not an ordinary dorm room. Here, the lights are on at sunrise, and they're off at dark, because at this school, the last thing you want to do is fail. This is Chiefs training camp at Missouri Western State University. Classes are now in session.
Well, before the break, we talked about offensive linemen. One of you asked, hey, good quarterback, good line. Really, it's both. You and I were both around, I think, the gold standard of an offensive line when you had a Pro Football Hall of Famer in Willie Rofe, a future Pro Football Hall of Famer in Will Shields, who was the best offensive lineman, quite honestly, I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You had Casey Wegman at center. You had John Tate at right tackle, and Brian Waters, a Pro Bowler, at left guard. Now, that was, to me, one of the top five offensive lines in the history of this league, and they wore this uniform, and we all saw what that led to. Mm-hmm. Putting together an offensive line, what does it take?
You know what? It takes reps. It takes time. You've got to really have a good idea of what that guy next to you on the left or the right is thinking, because to a degree there's some things that happen on the line of scrimmage without talking. You've just got to see a set, and you guys have to have repped everything throughout the week and done your preparation that you know if it's this, you're doing this. If it's that, you're doing something different. So that's huge. You've got to have the trust in the guys, because lots of times you're sliding one way or the other, and you've got to know that the guy who's on your inside edge and you're sliding to the left and he's on your inside edge here, that you've got to know that if you put that wing up and you hold him just a little bit, that the other guy's coming to take him. It's things like that. It's little nuances. There's nothing to me as technical in football as offensive line play, in my opinion.
Okay. Week ago, if you got perfect attendance and watching Chiefs Live during camp, you saw me go down through the numbers, the mathematics issues. Let's look at the mathematics of the offensive line, and here they are. There are 15 offensive linemen in this camp. You've got guards, you've got guys that can do both, you've got centers, of course. This page, when you see this page of guys, Kendall, what do you see?
Well, you see your five starters, of course, but after that, we talked about it, I alluded to it a little bit ago in terms of Jeff Schwartz and Donald Stevenson. Those are your two veterans. To me, you're vying for that eighth spot and maybe ninth, and that's going to depend on how they play. Just like we talked about in the D-backs in terms of do you keep 9 or 10, depending upon how good they're playing and take away from another position, here's the other thing. If do you keep 8 linemen? Do you keep 9? Are you going to suit 7 up, or are you going to suit 8 up on game day? Things of that nature, so you've got to see. Certainly, I think the one who's pushing, and we got this question, and we always love your questions, is Eric Kush, the backup center right now. But he's got to prove it, too, that he belongs. And so it'll be interesting to see how he does in the preseason, because let's face it, he's going to get a lot of reps.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Eric in just a little bit. But I've noticed a trend in the league the last couple of years, because and this goes to what you were just saying, to get an extra linebacker, get an extra DB, maybe an extra wide receiver. We broke that down and get it to where Dave Tobe wants on the special teams. I've seen 7 linemen on rosters,
right,
that one spot, because they're saying, wait a minute, I know I need some insurance, but I don't need any more than 2 guys to insurance if they can swing. It's like relievers in baseball. How many do I keep for middle relievers? Are you seeing less and less linemen instead of 9? There may be 9 and they'll go 8 active, or they'll have 8 on the roster and go 7 active on a Sunday.
Well, Mitch, you're exactly on it, because when it comes down to it, a few years back when they added more people to the practice squad, now if you can get somebody through who's young, who say a Kush or somebody of that nature, that you think maybe you can let go and get onto the practice squad, but you keep them going there because you've decided you're only going to suit up 7 for a game. As long as you've got as many as you need to run the practices, then if something happens that week in the game and somebody goes down, then you just bring somebody up from the practice squad to replace. But you're exactly right. It is a numbers game, and offensive line tends to get squeezed a little bit.
There is a new kid in town, and you won't miss him if you come to camp, because he's a large guy. His name is Rock Watkins, drafted last year by the St. Louis Rams, and the Chiefs wasted no time today. You and I were watching practice. In the one-on-one drills, I saw him rep at left guard, right tackle, and he did a pretty good job. All of a sudden now, there may be somebody else to either challenge or be a compliment to a Schwartz or a Kush with this Watkins game.
Well, you're right. I was really amazed, number one, that he got in things that quickly, and number two, somebody of what looks like this caliber was available. This guy, he's a mountain of a man. I mean, like you said, you cannot miss him. I feel like he's put together pretty well. I feel like he moves pretty well. Let's face it, at South Carolina, he was all SEC. If you're all SEC, you did something right in college. So that will be an interesting one to watch as well.
It's very interesting, too, because he's very well acquainted with Eric Berry. Grew up, basically, with Eric Berry and almost like family to EB. Eric had a chance to talk about the new lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs, Rock Watkins.
That's my brother, you know, Rakevious Watkins, big swing. But we played high school ball together back at Creekside, and we went to middle school and stuff together like that. So, like, He stayed right in the same neighborhood as me, so we hung out every day. And he chilled with my family, like my dad called him son and stuff like that. So like that's like my brother. So
what was your reaction when you heard he was coming?
Man, I was really excited. I was upset because you know, the Rams had released him or whatever, and I was just telling him just stay focused. You know, it always work out for the best. And didn't know he was gonna end up 3 hours away from there. Ended up here, and like I told him, just take advantage of the opportunity. And just the fact that we in the league and on the same team, like we got so many people back at home who look up to us and look at us as hope, you know what I'm saying, just to get to another different level and get out of the situation they in. And I just tell them, like, we talk about it all the time, just showing everybody back at home, like, you really can be successful and make it out your situation. So we both going to take advantage of the situation.
Met Eric's family. Family's important to him, and now he's got family here, essentially, with the newest offensive lineman, Rock Watkins. Who can play, we've already seen today, both guard and tackle. Now, you've asked about Eric Kush. You've talked about Eric Kush. We're going to hear pretty soon from Eric Kush, but here again is another one of your Division II guys trying to make it in the National Football League. What are you seeing from Kush so far?
You know, I think he's doing a good job. I'm more interested in his pass blocking because I think most linemen at this level can generally run block pretty well. I've seen him adjust. I think it was a little bit quick for him at the beginning, but I think he's come along. I'm seeing him use his hands pretty well, getting them inside the chest, inside the defender, so he can control them. I think he's doing a good job of sitting on the bull rush, and if you can stop the bull rush, quite honestly, you should be able to do some good things in the center, because normally you have bumpers on either side of you to bounce people off of a little bit and get caught in trash. So I like what I'm seeing, but again, just like I keep talking about, Mitch, with everybody, let's see it in a game. You've got to see when the bolts are flying and things are going live. You got to understand and see how people react. And then for him, it's going to be big.
And we'll go and talk about that a lot during our broadcast on Friday night. We'll go to you a lot to look at that. And what I've seen from Kush, and I like it, and just, well, he's been here now 2 weeks, but I'm seeing improvement. It's not like he's descending or holding the water. He seems to be gaining traction every day. But Kush is also, he knows this is football calculus in the NFL.
So, Eric, coming from a Division II school, how big of a jump has this been?
There's a lot more competition. You know, people out here, are grown men. So that's something I got to get used to. You know, every play is, facing gigantic men, you know. So I just work every day, to get better and better and improve, and we'll see what happens.
You've been working closely with Rodney Hudson. What has he been teaching you?
Mostly he teaches me that you can't come out here and try to be perfect. You have to come out here and, look at practice from the day before, a couple of days before, and try to improve, one thing at a time, if your punches on pass pro are lacking the day before, come out and try to fix that. You know, if you're a little too high the day before, come out and try to fix that. You know, don't come out here and try to do everything perfect. You'll drive yourself nuts, and you just got to fix one thing at a time, right?
Now, Coach Reed is known for having a pretty intense camp. How has it been so far?
It's pretty intense right now. You know, we come out here for almost 3 hours, and we're working very, very hard out here. So, for 6 days in a row before we get a day off. So, I'd say it's very intense.
Just every day trying to go. And we had an interesting question, too, for one of our fans from Lincoln, Nebraska. And in fact, I met some fans here from Lincoln today that was watching practice. So it's awesome. Also a group from Omaha. So we love the Cornhusker State coming down and checking us out in St. Joe, not far away. Actually brought Kush in for a visit. And you don't see that always a lot with offensive linemen or a later round pick or a guy from Division II. So evidently, how much was he on the radar of this team?
Well, he certainly was. And just to further elaborate on that, Mitch, the reason you don't see that is because normally there's only so many people they can bring in by rule. So, yeah, if you bring in a guy who's a sixth or seventh round pick, you must like something about him. And obviously the Chiefs did, making him the sixth round pick. So, I think the fact that they were a little bit bare at that spot also, and they knew that they were going to do something at that spot, probably had a little bit to play in it. And let's be honest, I love Division II kids, but me being one myself, but if you're going to draft somebody who's Division II, maybe you want to see a little bit more about them as well.
Well, a guy that's going to be interested to go back to New Orleans this week, and this is just another sentence in the same discussion, is Rodney Hudson. And remember Rodney, it was the New Orleans game last year where he broke his leg and was lost for the season. Ryan Lilje, now Bronco, had to move over to play the spot. So that also had to probably deal with this, because to bring in Kush, concern or just interested to see how Rodney would come back from his injury. So let me ask you, Rodney, what are you seeing from Rodney in this camp, and how about his return from injury?
Yeah, Rodney's completely back. I've really been impressed. I don't see any limping. I don't see any ill effects of him. He's as athletic as I thought he was beforehand. I'm going to tell you right now, he's only getting better on pass blocking because he has to go against big number 92 all the time, and that's a great thing. He's going to get into a game. He's like, oh, these guys are small compared to what I deal with every day. But he's doing a good job. I think he does a good job pulling around the edge, and I think you're going to see that a lot this year because he is very, very mobile, leading some outside plays. I think he does a nice job, Mitch, kind of leaving his guy from one side and putting a wing there to hold for the guard to get by and getting up to the second level and getting to the linebackers. And, folks, if you really want to watch something interesting, watch the offensive line and watch how the guys get up to the second level. And generally, big runs happen when guys get up to the second level. And it's not necessarily that they make these devastating blocks. They get up there. They're a nuisance. They may push them by the play. The running back may cut up behind them. So it's very, very interesting. Offensive line play very, very intricate. And I'm going to tell you right now, Coach Heck, Coach Chung, I think they're doing a great job with the guys.
And in this scheme, I've noticed, too, Rodney's asked to do, and this is a little bit to your point, not only to pull, and we saw Casey Wigman be able to pull all the way outside the tackle when he played as a chief, but Rodney's ability to get downfield by design. Now, in run plays, he wants to get to the second level, ISO plays or whatever, but there's some design plays for Rodney to get to a certain spot down the field, and I've been impressed with him and his ability to get to point Z.
No question about it. If you're 295 pounds, 300 pounds, and you're pulling, first of all, you had to snap the ball first, then you're pulling around people, you've got to get depth, and you still want to get out there to pick up maybe a middle backer scraping, or sometimes even the weak side backer coming over, or even a safety. I mean, things like that. It's those downfield blocks that make the difference between a 10-yard run and a touchdown. And I'm going to tell you right now, he is versatile, and it's good to see, because that's going to be an important part of the offense.
And I think it's accentuated within this scheme specifically. Well, it is ironic that Rodney's going back to his first game, returning from injury to New Orleans, the place where his season was lost a year ago. But Rodney's all about it, and he's going to talk about his injury and trying to get back, and also what it means to have Andy Reid and the teaching he's receiving.
Last year, you had your issues with the injuries and all that stuff. How's it been to be in camp and kind of feel finally like you're 100% back? And
Yeah, I'm excited to be back. Excited to be back. Be back around the guys, be back on the field, be able to help out.
You have a coach too who he loves the offensive line. Can you tell with Andy, when you guys watch film or go through plays, how much he appreciates this position?
Yeah. He coaches everybody up. You know, really a really good coach. Coaches everybody up. All coaches. You know, focus on the small things.
Lackey, he's got a bright future, I think. We talked about Brandon Albert earlier, and we're going to close the show by chatting with Brandon. But to me, it looks like, you know, Brandon kind of fought through some injuries last year. He just ground out the season, and I admired him. He's respected in this locker room.
Yeah.
We all know about the franchise tag and handling all that, but Brandon came here. What are you seeing from his attitude and work ethic so far after over a week in this camp?
Well, Mitch, he understands that he's the elder statesman when it comes to the offensive line. That doesn't happen often when you're a six-year player. But, you know, a lot, like you said, a very interesting offseason, a lot to go on. The business side of it happened, but it's done. And I like the fact that he came to camp in shape. He's healthy. I'm going to tell you what's even more in shape is mentally he's in shape, because he's on his game. He's working his game. And what I like is he's trying to help all the guys. He joked about being a little bit crusty and the old man, but when I got to talk to him, he took some time out to talk to me, and he had just been having a really heart-to-heart with number 72, Eric Fisher. And this, to me, is a true pro. When you're a left tackle, and you talked about it, you've drafted the number one guy overall who's thought to be a left tackle eventually sometime, but playing right tackle, what's Brandon Albert doing? He's helping him each and every play that he can, whenever he can talk to him, helping him out with things. That's big. That's being a pro. That's wanting to win. That pays dividends down the line. There's no doubt.
And Brandon has perspective here. He was a first-round pick. He wasn't the 1-1. He was in the middle of the first round in 08, but he was thrown immediately into the action. There was no waiting for him. Same thing that's being expected of Eric Fisher. Now, earlier, we had our Rachel Sanchi talk to Eric Cush. Rachel also had a chance to talk with Brandon Albert after practice today.
Brandon, you look outstanding out there at this camp. You look determined. What have you been doing this offseason to prepare?
Basically, mentally getting right. You know, I knew physically I could do what the coaches asked me, but mentally just getting myself ready and trying to help lead this team in this offensive line. And that's my main goal. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm making some mistakes out there, you know, technique-wise, but every day I'm trying to do the right things they're asking me and try to help lead this offensive line, help lead this team with the other leaders on this team.
You and Eric Fisher seem pretty close. How has it been working with him?
You know what, man, he's been real receptive of everything I've been trying to tell him. You know, I think people thought it was going to be awkward, but, you know, people know me. I'm not that type of person. I'm trying to help him and help the young guys, not just him, but the young guys, you know, help them understand what's going to happen to him, help them understand what we need to do and how we need to work. You know, I've been in the same position as him, so I understand what he's going through. Not the number one pick, but I've been a first-round draft pick, a lot of pressure. And basically, I just told him, man, don't worry about everything. Just learn what you got to do from Coach Heck and Coach Chung and apply and play football.
As you said, you've been trying to lead this group. What has it been like, you know, having that experience and being a veteran in this group?
You know, I played a lot of games early and young. I've been through a lot, wins and losses. I've been beat. I won a lot when I lost, so, you know, in terms of matchup-wise. But, you know, I've been through things that I could help tell the young guys and, you know, warn them on certain things. But, you know, I'm still trying to figure out this game. I haven't figured it out yet. You know, each day I'm trying to get better on something and, you know, trying to improve myself.
Again, you can follow Rachel at @KCChiefs_Rachel. You can follow you at Kendall Gammon. And you can follow me at Mitch Holtis. A lot easier than @KCChiefs_Rachel. But
yeah, I'm a simple guy.
Love to have you follow us on Twitter. But there you go, the offensive line. And as we close the show, just overall, this scheme in specific, to me, demands a lot from its offensive line. All of them do, but this one's, particularly those interior three guys, what about the specific demands on those guys?
Well, the fact is, it's so important to hold the pocket. You hear about the tackles, and you see them if they get beat. It's really talked about a lot, but it's that interior pocket that you've got to hold. You don't want to get any farther than 2 yards back because you want to give your QB a chance to step up and deliver the ball on time. That's huge. But the fact is now, not only do you have your normal stuff, but you're going to have a lot of down blocking and guys, your guards, your center, your other guard, pulling around, leading the edge. You've got lots of screens and things of that nature, which you ask the interior guys to get out and lead also. So it's very, very important. Again, very intricate. It's something you don't see if you don't decide to look for it.
And if you've really got guts, you would have a fantasy football league with offensive linemen, the most forgotten people in the game. And your fantasy league depends on them.
The most forgotten aside from the long snapper.
And have a fantasy league with long snappers, too. Doug. That would really be good. Let us know how that works out, by the way. He's Kendall Gammon. I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs. Thank you for joining us on this Sunday night edition of Chiefs Live from St. Joe.
This is a dorm room. But it's not an ordinary dorm room. Here, the lights are on at sunrise. And they're off at dark. Because at this school, the last thing you want to do is fail. This is Chiefs training camp at Missouri Western State University. Classes are now in session.